Good afternoon. So, last time we went over building processors from the components we described. We had our registers, our register file for that collection of the general purpose registers. We had our memories. And we needed to make decisions about how these were connected and wanted it to be different for different instructions. So we had these muxes, or sort of equivalent of an if-then. And each time we wanted to do something different for different instructions, we had a mux there, and we control the mux to, based on the I-code from opcode from the instruction memory to do, whatever, input we wanted to that component. We talked about how this worked with our processor timing. So the processor design we're using is what I call a single cycle processor, meaning each instruction takes exactly one cycle, that we have our rising edge of a clock that begins a cycle. And that changes the program counter register, which sets into motion all the computations for the instruction. And that prepares in our storage elements, our memory, our registers like the PC, and our register file, which is something that just wraps a bunch of registers probably, and prepares them to modify their values, but they don't actually do that modification until that rising edge of the clock. And that's when values are stored, and one of the values stored is the new program counter value, which moves us on to the next instruction. We also talked about our textbook's division of the instruction into stages. And because when our storage components and our other components work is based on that rising edge of the clock, or for things like an adder, based on when their inputs become stable, they'll produce an output. These stages aren't actually the timing of our processor. So for now, they're just a way of dividing up the processor, and we can kind of think about each stage individually when building our processor. So rather than going through our original strategy of going instruction by instruction and saying, okay, I want to add this instruction, what do I change here? We can look at each stage and say, okay, I'm looking at this stage which deals with reading a register file. What does this instruction want to read from the register file? What is this instruction? It goes systematically in the alternate way, which might be easier to do without errors. And the stages our textbook author chose were fetch, which is where we'd read the instruction, so it makes sense fetching that instruction, the actual machine code. It's also where we'd split it into pieces and compute the address of the next instruction. And by next instruction, I mean the thing that would follow in assembly. This is not necessarily the next instruction that we will run. So for example, for a jump, that's going to be done elsewhere. Then we have decode, which sounds like the place where we'd split up the instruction into pieces. It's not. It's the place where we read from the register file. We had execute, where we perform the actual arithmetic, so what our textbook decided to do with the ALU. So this would be for our add, subtract, XOR, and so on instructions, the actual addition, subtraction, or XOR operation. And for instructions that need to compute a memory address, where the memory address was computed. So like MR move Q, pop, and so on. We had our memory stage, and this is where we accessed memory for things that weren't the instruction itself. So meaning that we had our fetch stage where we accessed the machine code for the instruction. If we had to do another memory access, like for an MR move Q or a pop, we do it in this memory stage using our data memory component. Then there's write back, where you'd write to the register file, well, actually set up the write to the register file, so we compute the destination register and what value goes in there. And PC update, where we'd handle, usually our PC would be the address of the following instruction in assembly next cycle, but sometimes you want it to be something we're jumping to, or something we're calling, or something we're returning to. And this is where we'd handle making that choice. And I didn't mention, it's on this slide, that for the execute stage, that's also where we deal with condition code. So where we update our condition codes based on what we computed, or where for those instructions that need to interpret the condition codes, like figure out whether the less than condition is true based on the condition code's values, that's where it happens in the execute stage in our textbook authors division. And when we finished up last time, we were going through these stages one by one and thinking, okay, let's look systematically at what do we need to do for each instruction, what are our weird cases? What are the things where we're not going to do the most straightforward thing based on what the stage does? And we believe we've gotten up to memory. So before I move on to reviewing that and moving on to our last two stages right back in PC Update, questions about things we covered last time? So we were up to, we had memory, and we pointed out that we had some special cases here where the straightforward thing is that if we think of our typical memory instruction, we compute a memory address using their ALU, and we send, if we're writing to memory, we send the value of register A to there. And if we're not writing, well, it doesn't matter what we send because, you know, we're going to have the write-enable signal be false. So we had some exceptions. We had places where our address was not something we would compute with our ALU. So with pop and return, we learned that we're computing an address with the ALU, but we want to use the original value of the stack pointer instead of that address. And we had with call, we wanted to write not a value from a register, but the return address, which is the incremented PC, you know, PC plus 9 on this diagram. This is where we ended up last time, I believe. Questions about where we are so far? So our next stage is to write registers. And in our textbook's design, they've decided that we're going to have dest m and dest e for m for the register that's written based on a value from memory, and e for the register that's written based on a value from execute from the ALU. So our straightforward connection is that we take the value from the ALU and wire that up to dest e. We take the value from the data memory and wire that up to dest m, and we have to decide where to write it. So we're going to write into dest m, we're going to write RA. You might say, why RA? Because we think of our instructions that write a value from memory somewhere. These tend to be, I guess, these instructions, and apparently writing on this is super buggy today. So that is very cute. Why are things buggy? Oh. So hopefully that will fix that problem. Okay, so we have RA, and so you might say, why RA? So if we think of our MR move Q, it uses RA as its destination, and pop uses RA as its destination. So that's why we want RA as dest M. And for dest E, we want RB. We think of like add, for example, it uses RB as its destination. So that's our common case for dest m and dest e. And this is the convention our textbook chooses. So often students implementing our HCL homeworks won't do this. That's fine, as long as you make sure you're writing to the right register, the right value, no problem. I'm just showing the design our textbook used. So question, which of these instructions are we going to have a problem? So I'll give you 30 seconds to think about that. And we'll ask about the first instruction there, NOP. Just 30 seconds to think about, is there a problem with NOP here? So what does NOP need to do? So who thinks we have a problem with NOP? Okay. Someone tell me, what's the problem with NOP?
You're writing to a register even when you don't have anything to write.
Yeah, so we're always writing to a register, and we don't have any way of making that write not do anything. Like, the register index, RA or RB, well, there's something we got from the instruction memory. You might say, well, NOP doesn't have any registers memory in it. It D does not. But if you think of what we'd be writing in HCLRS, we'd just be saying, well, the instruction memory has a 10-byte output. We're taking something from the second byte of it, which is going to be the instruction after the NOP, whatever's there. And we're using that as register indexes. We're going to get something. And into that something, we're going to put a value that came out of the ALU, which is probably not going to be the same thing that was already in that register, or a value which came out of memory, which, again, probably not going to be the same thing that was already in that register. So this is not going to work out, and probably our easiest solution is going to be to add a mux here where we can send in regnon, which I'll represent as OXF. But you can write regnon in your HCL code. Okay, so that fixes NOP. And let's consider the other instructions with that fix. Because if you look at most of the other instructions, except for POP, they all actually write to one register. So we need one of those signals to be regnon, to be OXF. So with that fix in mind, that takes care of NOP. So NOP doesn't have a problem anymore. How about the other instructions after we make this fix so we can specify not to write to M or E, the M or E write ports. I'll give you a minute or so. Maybe a little more than that. We'll see how much time people think they need. Yes.
Considering the ones that still has a problem even after adding those multiplexers.
Yeah, so the question we're working on is after I added those two multiplexers so we can choose to not write to with DESD or DESDM, where do we still have a problem? If anywhere. Okay, who needs some more time? Okay, so everyone should be ready. Okay, so who thinks there's something, some problem with doing I remove Q? Okay, a couple people. Any volunteers to explain what you think would be an issue with I remove Q? So you're saying we need to get the data from the instruction and put it into the right port. So what do you mean by the data from the instruction?
The constant.
The constant, okay. So our constant, which is on this wire here, needs to somehow get to one of the right ports for data. And probably, given that I remove Q writes to RB, we want it to get here. And right now, there doesn't seem to be any way of doing that. Question back there?
Doesn't the wire from the instruction memory flow into the MUX before the ALU?
So question, doesn't it go to the MUX before the ALU? I agree, it does. So we can get the value to here. So how can we get it from there to our input to the register file? So there are two solutions our textbook talks about for this. So one is that we can, there's one solution our textbook talks about, two solutions we'll talk about. So one solution is the sort of direct solution where we just add a MUX here and let us select that value. The other solution, which is what our textbook does, is that we just add the ability to do an ALU operation with the ALUB, the second operand being 0, and then we can add 0 or XOR with 0 to pass our constant, which someone observed quickly, is in the input of the ALU, to its output. And that's what our textbook does instead of adding an extra MUX after the ALU. But both are fine solutions, and more commonly I see students do the solution of adding a MUX before the register file because that's a little more obvious. Okay, so we had a problem with I remove Q. Who thinks we have a problem with M remove Q? Okay, no one. How about R remove Q? Okay. Add. Okay. Pop. So most people. A significant number of people think there's a problem with pop. Anyone volunteer to tell me what you think is the wrong with pop? So we need to know where it needs to pop to. Can you be more explicit about that? So let's say the instruction I have is pop RAX, just to have a very concrete example. Is it RAX we're worried about? Okay. So someone else have, yeah. So doesn't pop send it to RB? So when I need to put it in, so the question is the destination register of pop RB? And the answer is, if you look at the encoding chart, which is the only way you could know this, it turns out that this destination register is RA. So if I have pop RAX, which I should make actually RAX, this is RA. So that is not a problem, but there is a problem. So can someone tell me, what does pop do? Mechanically, yes. Pops from the stack. So what is modified by the pop instruction? The stack pointer and the thing it pops into. So we're talking about modifying the thing it pops into, but we also need to somehow modify the stack pointer. Where's the stack pointer stored on this picture? Someone tell me, where's the stack pointer stored in this picture?
Next to SRCB.
What? Sorry?
Next to SRCB.
Yeah, so it's in the register file. So the stack pointer is in here. It's RSP, it's in the register file. We need to somehow change it in the register file. The only way it can do that is by using destd or destm to do that. We're already using destm to write the value we're popping. So we probably going to want to use destd to write to RSP. And if we look at our options, destd and next destd. So if we look at our options for setting destd, the register to write to, we have RB, which in the pop instruction is OXF or OXF, neither of which will specify the stack pointer register. None of them is RSP, so we're going to need to fix that by adding another option here to get the register index for RSP, which is 4 if you look it up. Questions? Not. Yes. RSP. Sorry. Yes, I should be writing larger so people can read it. Should write like that. Probably cleaner than that, but larger at least. Other questions? So this is what we end up with. So we need to be able to specify the stack pointer for pop, also push, call, and return. They all need to change the stack pointer. They all don't have stack pointer as an operand to their instructions. So we need a way of getting it to the register file. And it happens we use destd because we're computing a new value for the stack pointer with the ILU. So that gives us this design. So this is the where I have a mux before the input to the register file. So we mentioned our case of IRemoveQ, where we get this constant and send it in. We also have a similar case for RRemoveQ, where we get a register's value and send it directly. Or we can use our textbook's author solutions, where we have this mux with a 0 for the ALU input. In that case, if we want to copy for an IRemoveQ this displacement, we will send it into the ALU along with 0 and add them together, or XOR them together. If we want to take a register value, we'll take the value of register A, send it into the ALU along with 0 again, and add them together. And that's how we'll get the value out of the ALU, and it will get sent to the register file to be stored. And that would be implementing IRemoveQ or RRemoveQ. Questions about our write-back implementation? So after we have IRemoveQ implemented, after we have our writeback with IRemoveQ and RRemoveQ now handled correctly, along with pop and so on, we have our final stage, which is updating the program counter. And usually, this is the address of the following instruction, LP. We have 3 exceptions. We have calls, jumps, conditional or unconditional, and return. These are cases where we don't just go to the next instruction in assembly. So we have 3 cases for that. We have our case where it's call or a jump, which we want to jump to, in which case we will have our top input to this mux here, which is that the next program counter should be something we retrieve from the instruction. So part of the instruction is an address of the next thing to run. We saw this with our jump CPU. We also have this middle case here, which is for return. So in this case, if we trace back this wire, it comes all the way from the data memory. And that's the case where we read from the stack a return address, and we want to go there. Presumably a return address that was put there by call, but that's not guaranteed. And we have our bottom input, which is where the normal case is handled, where we added to the PC based on the instruction length what you implemented in last week's lab, hopefully. That's our normal default case, you know, what we're going to mostly do, but we have these other cases in order to like have loops or function calls. So questions about our PC update or anything else in our final version of this processor diagram? So if we look at our processor here, we have a bunch of muxes. We have this PC mux. We have a mux that controls test D and test M. We also have one that controls source B, but that's usually pretty clear. We have a mux that controls the input to the data memory that's data. We have a mux that controls the input to the data memory that's an address, and a mux that controls the A or B and B inputs the ALU, two muxes. And to think about sort of how we would build our processor, so we know we needed these muxes, let's think of how they work in specific instructions. We'll start with add. Specifically add R8 and R9. And something that I find helpful for thinking about problems like this is let's think about what values are actually on the wire. So I've sort of annotated the wires with the value that would be there. So RA is 8, RB is 9, because that's 8 and 9 from the instruction. And our PC plus instruction length is PC plus 2. And this value here I label as MPC plus 2. So M, I'm considering memory like a big array. So I'm saying that array at PC plus 1, that's would be the constant from the instruction if this were a call or a jump. Now, it isn't, but that value is still going to be there. It's not going to make sense, but there's going to be a value there, which is whatever is in memory starting at the second byte of the add instruction. Just not a useful value. We hopefully do not select it for our PC mux. I also have this notation where I say R index something. I could say the registers are an array, so R of 8 is the register with index 8, the value of that register, as opposed to just the index of the register, which is what's in RA. So with that in mind, exercises, figure out what all the muxes should be. I'll give you 40 seconds to a minute to think about it, and we'll go over that. Okay, who'd like some more time? So, let's start with the PC muck. So, meaning this one over here. Who wants us to use the tops input? The second input? The bottom input. Okay, so we have pretty good agreement. We want the bottom input, and that's because we want to take the address of the next instruction. We don't want, in this case, for call or return. Okay. How about for source B? Do you want the top input? Who wants the top input for source B? Okay, so pretty good consensus on that. We don't want to read from the stack pointer. This instruction doesn't do anything with the stack pointer. Doesn't seem useful. How about for dest M? Do you want the top input? The bottom input for dest M? Majority say the bottom input. So this is about what register do we write to. So we look at what our A is. It's 8. This instruction should write to register 9, not 8. So that can eliminate it by itself. That it's not writing to the right register. That's a problem. How about dest E? Who wants the top input? Okay, so that looks pretty good consensus. And because that's how we're actually going to write to register 9. So that's going to let us do that. Okay, how about ALUA? Who wants the top input to the ALUA mux, which is right over here? Top input. Middle input. Okay, we have pretty good consensus. Middle input, which is going to be the value of register 8. That's one of the things we want to do an arithmetic operation on, in this case, add. How about ALUB? Who wants the top input? Okay, pretty good consensus there, so have that. Okay, how about this mux here, which is going into the data input to the data memory, the value we want to potentially store. Who wants the top input to that? Wants the bottom input? Anyone have something else about this? Someone want to describe that something else? So the question is, wouldn't it be the base case where it chooses nothing? So you're saying that you can't think of a case for either one, so you'd like nothing on here. Unfortunately, if we're thinking of like these circuits as physical things, we have to put something there, right? It can't have no value. Yeah, so you're saying that in HCLRS, you'd like to put a dummy value on here. I think that's very reasonable. But the important thing is it doesn't matter is what you're getting at, right? That it shouldn't matter. So this should not matter. And why should it not matter? Because hopefully we've disabled, hopefully this right here, this should be a zero we're not writing. And that's why it shouldn't matter. So it'll be ignored. So questions about that idea? That it doesn't actually matter what we put in the data input because we're not writing? Okay, and the same is going to apply to this mux here, controlling the address input. We're not reading, so it's not gonna matter. Since we're not reading or writing, what address we put in, so it doesn't really matter what we put in there. Okay, and that is all the muxes we have here, and we can kind of verify that this circuit does what we expect. We expect that with these settings that we're going to take register 8 and 9, which is in fact what we will get, and we will add them together, and we will take the thing we add and store it somewhere, wherever dest E is. Dest E is in fact going to be register 9, so that's what we want. So questions? This example. Okay, so let's do this again for RM move queue. And as a refresher, so it's the form of this instruction is RM move queue from R A to D of R B. That's how it would be written in our machine code format table. Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's start. So for the PC, who wants the top input? Middle input? Bottom input? Okay, so that's the easy one. How about for source B? Who wants the top input? Bottom input? Doesn't matter. Okay, so for source B, which I probably should have highlighted, I want the top input. I want RB because I need to read that register to do my address computation. Whatever it is. How about for destem? Who wants the top input? For destem, who wants the bottom input? Okay, so most of us want the bottom input. So this is to memory move, not to register move. So we don't modify a register. And the same is going to apply for dest. We don't want to modify a register, so we're going to supply none there. Okay, so how about our ALUA input, this mux here? Who wants the top input? The middle input? Bottom input? Doesn't matter. Okay, so most people select the top input, which I agree. So this value here, this is the immediate from the instruction, this is our D. And we want to do some arithmetic on that D, so we better get it into the ALU. This is our only way to do that. So hopefully that will let us do the operation we want. So that's going to be our top input. How about for the ALUB mux? Who wants the top input? Bottom input? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus. We want the top input, and this is going to be our, this is going to be register B. going in, that's what we want to do. The yes, question.
So, like, where exactly is the displacement, like, arithmetic being calculated? Is it in the instruction memory, or?
The question is, where did this displacement D that I marked on this, this wire here come from? And it came from, yes, the instruction memory.
So it was computed, like, the whole function was computed from the instruction memory, and then the value was sent to the ALU?
So question is, the whole function was computed from the instruction memory, the value was in the ALU. So, yeah, our instruction memory had the machine code for the instruction. So that has some opcode and some and register indexes. We're using the register indexes here. We're also using the opcode. I just didn't draw those because those are control signals that I told you earlier I would just not draw. But we're doing that. And in addition, we have the actual value of the constant as part of that output.
So
the assembler computed it for us.
Oh.
And we want to use that for our computation. Other questions? Okay, so we have our D plus our B. And how about this mux here, the one on the value input to the data memory? Do we want who has the top input? Bottom input? Doesn't matter. Okay, so everyone, what's the bottom input? No one seems to be going for doesn't matter this time. That's because we're actually storing something. So how about the one on the address input? Who wants the top input, the one from the ALU? The bottom input, the one from the register file? Okay, good. So we want the top input because we want to add the displacement. We don't want the version without the displacement added. Maybe that would be useful for something else. Well, it will be for return pop and return, but not for this instruction. So that's, yeah, right now I have the some questions on what we did for our move queue. Okay, so let's do. Well, let's skip ahead to this one, to return. Didn't get to this in the morning lecture, but since we have time, we probably should go over this since it will be useful. In the morning, I just had more questions.
I'm not sure what to do with that.
The bottom one.
Okay, so who'd like some more time? Okay, so let's start with the PC. Who thinks we would use the top input for our, the middle input, bottom input? Okay, so we have pretty good consensus on the middle input, the one that comes from the data memory. So if we remember what the return instruction does, we get a return address from the stack and use it to set our PC. How about for source B? Do we want the top input, the bottom input? It doesn't matter. Oh, sorry. It doesn't matter who raise hands for. Those are the options. I'm going to give it doesn't matter. It does matter. It's the bottom input we want. But I'm going to give the it doesn't matter option for several of these because, you know, that comes up. How about for destem, top input? That would be R, which would be the value of RA, which would be RB. Top input, bottom input. So we have good consensus that we don't want to use destem. For dest, top input, which would be RB. The middle input, which would be no register, register none, RxF. The bottom input. So you have pretty good consensus at the bottom input. We want to write to the stack pointer. So remember that popping not only involves reading from the stack, but also involves modifying the stack pointer. Which, you know, pushing same way, this is something often forgotten. Okay, so how about ALUA? Should we use our top input, the displacement value or immediate value from the instruction? The middle input, which is the register value that was read from RA. The bottom input, which is the constant 8. It doesn't matter. Use anything. No? Okay, so people think it matters. We want 8. And what we're thinking is that, oh, we're going to need to add 8 because that's the size of things on our stack. Or subtract 8 to do this instruction. How about for the ALUB input? Do we get the value from register B or 0? So value from register B. Okay, so we have pretty good consensus on that. I would agree. That is going to be our stack pointer from earlier. So that's how we're going to get our stack pointer and do some arithmetic on it. Okay, so how about our address input to the data memory? So do we want the top input from the ALU? Well, the bottom input from the register file, the value of the stack pointer. It doesn't matter which one because we're not going to use the memory. Okay, we have a mix of answers here. Most people say we want the bottom input, and that is going to be correct. So question is why? Why not that and not the top input? Or not? It doesn't matter. So let's start with why not it doesn't matter. Well, you already told me that we're going to put into the PC this value that comes from the data memory. So the data memory better be reading from somewhere, so the address it reads from is going to matter. So that's how I can tell it does matter what we set this mux to. It's going to change things. So as for why not the value we just computed, so let's think of what the instruction does. So if we have our stack pointer initially points to the return address, and after we're done, we want it to point so below it. So this green value, this new, I should write not as a scribble, so our new RSP, here, is going to be not pointing to the return address. because the return address should no longer be on the stack. And I guess I drew the stack upside down, didn't I? Yes, I did. So the new return address, which normally I would draw, so we have our new RSP because we're adding to the stack pointer. RSP, which is the old RSP plus 8. So after the return is done, we want the stack to point to not the return address, but beyond it. So that's the value we're computing with our ALU. We don't want to read from there because we don't want to read this green value here. We want to read the return address that's below it. That's the original value of the RSP points there. And that value is the one that came out of our register file here, and we want to send that into the data memory. We still want to compute that new RSP value, but we're not going to use it to access the memory. So questions of how I figured that out? Yes? What's the top input for ALUA? The top input would be the D or the immediate value. So for this instruction, there is none, but if we had a M remove Q, R remove Q, I remove Q, then that top input would be the constant from the machine code for that. So for this instruction, it's still going to have a value, it's just going to be junk from a following instruction. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Okay, so we have one more mux. We have this mux here that controls the data input to the data memory. Should it be the top signal, the PC plus 9? The bottom one? It doesn't matter which one. Okay, so most people say it doesn't matter, and that indeed should be the case. Shouldn't matter because we should set this to not write yes read. And that's going to make it so it doesn't matter what we have as data input. The address will matter because we're reading, but we're not going to be writing, so it doesn't matter what value we put in to be writing. Some questions? This example here. Yes? This question is why it doesn't matter. So one of our inputs to our data memory is, do we want to write or not? And for the return instruction, we're just popping something from the stack. We aren't modifying the actual contents of the stack in any way, so we aren't going to be writing anything to the memory. We're going to modify the stack pointer. We're not going to write anything to the memory. And because we're not writing anything to the data memory is not going to use this data input. So it's going to have some value on it, but it won't care what it is because it won't end up showing up in memory like it normally, quote-unquote normally, when the data memory is being used, it would. Okay. Other questions, follow-ups? Yes?
So for call, you would use the ALU value since
it's the question is, for call, we'd use the ALU value as where to write into memory? Yes. And the same for push. Other questions? Okay, so I think I have a few more of these. I just have like the version with other things prepared, but probably we understand this well enough that we can move on to our next topic. So as I mentioned when we talked about stages, we're going to like move from having these stages be just a conceptual thing to be a way we actually organize our processor. But to talk about that, I'm going to first talk about a very non-computational task to motivate the way we're going to do this. That's going to be doing laundry. So if I have two loads of laundry, I have some whites and some colors. I want to do them as separate loads so I don't have all my clothes be pink. I do the whites, I put them in the washer, I wait for that to finish, then I move them from the washer to the dryer, I wait for that to finish, I move them from the washer to the folding table. Okay, done the first half, now I can start the second half. do the colors, put them in the washer. Then the washer finishes. I move them from the washer to the dryer. That finishes. Then I fold them up. And I've finally done my two loads of laundry. So, and it took me, you know, a little over just about 2 hours. I have a really fast dryer, you may notice. So, you know. Get them done quickly. Anyone have a suggestion for way I could have done this more efficiently? Yeah.
Wash your colors at the same time as drying your whites.
Yeah, so your observation, wash the colors at the same time as drying the whites. Like, your observation is, this washer here, you're not using it, you could use it. Like, why are you leaving it doing nothing? So naturally, we'd end up with a schedule sort of more like this. Where right after I finish the whites and move them over, I want to start the colors in the washer so I don't have all this time when I could be using the washer, but I'm not. And this gets things done a lot faster. I can do a whole extra load in the same amount of time. And we're going to apply this kind of concept, which we'll call pipelining, to our processor. And sort of the way to think about this is that when I'm finished with one stage, when I'm done with the washer, I'm going to move on to doing the dryer for that. And as I'm doing that, I'm going to take the next load, the next operation for our processor, the next instruction, and do the first step of it at the same time. So I'm going to do parts of two operations at once, because I have these independent different things that they're working with. Okay. So that's going to be more efficient. And you might say, oh, it's going to be like twice or three times as efficient. Well, not quite. So if we look at how efficient our new timeline is, we have some wasted time. So when I was starting my load of sheets, I couldn't do that right away after the colors were done in the washer because I had to wait for the dryer to become free, for the colors to move on from, you know, stop occupying the washer. You know, so I have this extra time that I'm spending that I wouldn't have been spending normally. That when I did my original pattern, I didn't have any time wasted like that where, you know, I had to wait afterwards. And I have this time, we look from the perspective of, I have my colors in the washer, I have to wait for the dryer to finish, you know. So there's this extra time I'm spending. And this diagram is kind of unrealistic. If you think of a typical dryer, a dryer that took half an hour to dry a load of laundry would be impressive. And maybe your situation would be more like this. And that would be actually a lot of time that you'll be spending waiting to move things from the washer to the dryer, because you're waiting for that slow dryer relative to the washer. And that's going to determine how fast you can do things. And one perspective of looking at how efficiently am I doing laundry, you might say that this means that this is not a fast way of doing laundry. What you can say is that if I look at what I'll call the latency, so for my latency, I'm going to mean the time from starting something to finishing it. So that's going to be latency. And that's one way of saying how fast is something. So how fast do I do loads of laundry? Well, in this scheme, it takes me, once I get started, a little over 2 hours to do a load of laundry. And that, you know, from start to finish. And in my original strategy, where I did one and only after that was all finished, moved on to the next. Should remind you of our single cycle processor. It was faster. It took me less than 2 hours with the same slow dryer. So we made things slower. A whole bunch slower because now we're dependent on the speed of that dryer for how fast we could do all loads of laundry. But you never tell me that, gosh, you shouldn't be doing this, the second strategy here, because you're doing each load of laundry slower. No one would ever say that, because that's not the speed we care about. Yes, if I actually measure starting to finishing each load of laundry, it's slower, except for the first one, which, you know, if we're doing tons of loads, won't really matter. But that's not the measurement we care about. So if we're measuring the speed of doing laundry, you know, we want to measure something else, and the same thing is going to be true for our processor. We're not going to want to measure the time from start to finish of a single instruction most of the time. That's not going to be the important attribute. That's not going to be what you, as a programmer, are going to care about the processor's use. You're not going to say that the processor that does one instruction at a time and does each one faster is just better. Instead, you're going to care about what we'll call throughput, the rate of doing many. And when we talk about throughput, we're going to talk about having lots of instructions, one after another. So because, you know, if we're thinking about like throughput for a processor, we have literally millions of instructions. So we're never going to have to worry about that sort of startup time. And I always assume, as I show here, that we have something happening before, right? That we, you know, the only time we really care about is when we already are doing tons of loads of laundry, or in our processor, tons of instructions. That's the performance we're going to try to measure. And our throughput is going to be something we can measure by looking at how long is it between when we finish instructions. And in that this case, this is a little less than an hour. And I can compute how we usually measure throughput in sort of operations per unit time. So in this case, 1.2 loads per hour. So that's how much we get done sort of overall, even though each load of laundry takes a lot longer than that. But that's sort of the useful rate at which we do laundry. So if like we were running a laundry doing business, that's the number we probably care about more. And we could also measure this as the time between when we start things, because you know this is just, it's going to be the same. Once we can start something new, once we finish something. So we can measure it by either measuring the interval between when we start things or finish things, or when we start any step, you know, it's going to be all the same. And as in this example, it's kind of determined by the slowest part, that we're always have, after we finish with the washer, we're always waiting for the dryer to finish up because the dryer is slowest. If we're manning the folding table, we're always waiting for the dryer to finish because the dryer is slowest. So we're always dependent on the speed of the slowest stage in here. And we're going to see the same thing is going to hold true for our processor. The slowest stage is going to determine our overall throughput. And when we're thinking about how can we make things faster, that's what we're going to really care about. So questions on latency versus throughput. So we have our latency, finish to end, versus throughput. Just sort of the amount we can get, amount of operations we can get done while we're doing, you know, as many as possible. Other questions on pipelining? Okay, so next time we're going to talk about how to apply this not to our laundry situation, but to circuits. So we're going to want to apply it to ultimately, the circuit that I, you know, we talked all about setting muxes for today. Yeah, we're going to have to apply it to this. But we're going to start simpler because that circuit is all very daunting even without pipelining. So we're going to start with doing a very simple example of multiplying by 3 by adding twice. And to see the opportunity we're going to go for here, if we think about how this adder probably works, is we put in some values, and after some amount of time, the adder has a stable output, which is the sum of those two values. So let's say I put in the value 7 in A. So this is 7, this is 7, and this is 7. Then this first adder here is going to be, you know, it's going to get that value, and after some amount of time, we're going to say 50 picoseconds, it's going to have a stable output, which is 14. So we're going to get 14 on this signal here. And when that's done, we're going to have a stable input to this adder, and this adder can start working on adding 14 and 7 to get 21. And so this whole process takes 100 picoseconds to do our times 3, and gives us a throughput of 10 results per nanosecond. And the observation we can make is that if we think of the same sort of situation we have with our washer, well, half the time here, this first adder isn't actually doing any real work, right? We're using the adder, and then we're not using it. It's just sitting there, not doing any actual addition. And the same thing is true of our second adder. Half the time, it's not really doing any addition. And this is the same sort of scenario we saw with our washer and dryer initially, that we had, you know, half the time our washer and dryer weren't actually doing any washing and drying. So we're going to use the same kind of solution with our circuits. And we'll talk about how to apply that next time. What we'll see is that we're going to have to do something, because the adders here are doing a little bit of work, which is that they're holding a value. So the reason why this output is going to be 14 is because this adder is making sure that's still the case. We're going to have to do some extra work to, if we want the adder to do something else, to let it do something else while, you know, keeping that value 14 around. Our solution is going to be storage a register to do that. So we'll need a register to hold the value, because the adder won't be holding it constant for us if we want the adder to do something else. So we'll go over that next time. I'll take questions before, since we have 4-ish minutes. Okay. I guess we're all set.